This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
I'm Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Kennedy.
I'm Sean Duffy, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Tuesday, February 20th, 2024. I'm Dave Anthony. It's been a good couple of days from Vladimir Putin's perspective. His military's taken over a city in Ukraine, and his biggest critic died in a prison in Russia.
Putin doesn't just get rid of his opponents quietly. He wants everyone to see what happens if you speak out against him, and, you know, often cruel and painful deaths.
I'm Lisa Brady. Younger employees are bringing different expectations to the workplace, and they have some stereotypes to shake off.
They don't know how to email. They don't know etiquette with their boss. But I'm really hopeful that if we give them time, mentoring, coaching, they too can turn it around.
And I'm Tommy Lahren. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
Alexei Navalny is being mourned around the world. That's at a gathering in London, paying tribute to the democracy activist who died at a Russian penal colony Friday. This is in Berlin.
Putin, the killer!
A lot of people are blaming Russian leader Vladimir Putin for silencing his fiercest critic, including President Biden, who praised Navalny.
He bravely stood up to the corruption, the violence, and all the bad things that the Putin government was doing.
Well, he says the U.S. is considering new sanctions. Some in Congress are pushing to designate Russia a state sponsor of terrorism. Russia calls the West's blaming Putin obnoxious. While Navalny's widow, Yulia, in a YouTube video, vows to carry on her husband's work.
By killing Alexei, Putin killed half of me. Half my heart and half my soul. But I still have the other half. And it tells me that I have no right to give up.
Russian authorities say they won't release Navalny's body to his family for 2 weeks as they investigate. They've already said he suffered sudden death syndrome.
Navalny stood as the one man in Russia who would not back down in the face of Putin's regime.
Benjamin Hall is a Fox News senior correspondent in London.
The one man who, despite risk to himself, stood up and said, "We can fight for a new Russia. We can fight for democracy and freedom." And he rallied millions of people around him. Back in 2013, he won 27% of the vote in the one election he was able to run in, which is a huge figure considering he only ran for a few months. And now today, the one person that many people hoped would be the opposition, could be the future of Russia, well, last week he died. It looks very clear, according to most people, that he was killed by Putin. And so there now seems to be no possible way of anyone sort of overthrowing Russia or changing the direction it is in.
Now, obviously, it's very difficult for him to do much as an opposition leader from prison. I mean, he had been set aside, and this colony that he was in, I mean, this was way north, right?
It's as bad as it comes. It's one of those work camps right up in Siberia. I mean, Putin regime tried to keep him as far away as they possibly could, and they didn't give him any telephone communications. You didn't hear from him often, but he managed to continue getting messages out. He would somehow smuggle messages out, all optimistic, all saying, "We keep fighting, keep strong to our message, and stay on side with us." And so, you know, Putin must have felt that even locking him away in the middle of the Arctic winter, in a place where he said, "You maybe got 2 hours of light a day in the winter, and terrible mosquitoes all summer and light all day." But even there, he managed to keep sending these messages out to the people who supported him. And he mustn't forget that he chose to go back to Russia. He was poisoned in 2019 by Novichok, almost died. The international community made a huge fuss about getting him out of Russia. The Germans managed to have him at one of their hospitals, but he chose to go back, even though he knew he was going to be arrested as soon as he landed, because he said, "I need to be on the ground. I cannot show the people who believe in me and support me that I will leave my country." So He knew he was going to prison. He knew he was going to be arrested, and yet he chose to do so.
Now, his widow put out a video saying that she vows to continue his work. Does she have, she is well known? I mean, what has her role been other than being supportive of him while he was alive?
She's not as well known as him, but this may well galvanize her, certainly galvanize her, give her a lot of attention. They have a big machine around them. They did develop quite a unique PR machine on all social media campaigns, and that will continue. And she has said clearly she will. Whether or not she can mobilize people in the same way he did is unknown at this point, but certainly she'll be trying for her. And you ought to think he has two children as well, and they've been appearing a little bit in the media as well. So hopefully they will continue, and whether or not she can galvanize much support, we don't know.
Yeah, well, you know, the Russian media is not covering this very much, and they're certainly trying to stop tributes, right, in these different places across Russia for Navalny.
If you are putting down flowers at any of the memorial, you are being arrested, over 400 arrested. And this is Vladimir Putin sending a clear sign that there is no dissent. You cannot even mention his name. In fact, Putin himself never mentioned Navalny's name. He was asked many times about him in interviews, but he never said his name. He always diverted from that. They want to obliterate everything about him. And yes, you can't see or hear him on Russian TV or radio, but the young Russians, particularly the urbanized ones, Moscow, St. Petersburg, they use VPNs. They can get around some of the blockades, and they are quite accessible on social media. So it's hard to know how many are really getting the news from outside Russia, but there is certainly quite a big group of people who are, and it's just whether or not they can find the strength to come together. But look, if you, more than 10 of you gather in Russia and say anything against the regime, you are arrested. There was a poet who wrote an anti-war poem in the last few months. He was sentenced to 7 years in a penal colony. You know, if you write a graffiti that is against the regime or Putin, you are sent away for 7 years. And so, you know, it's just one of these cases where the fear factor is so high that it doesn't look at this point as if anyone else is going to raise their head.
And an election is looming, right? And our next month, isn't Putin expected to get another term? President for life, if he, as long as he wants. I mean, he's not a young man anymore, but he can have that job as long as he wants, apparently.
He certainly will. I think there was one occasion. You remember when the Wagner forces under Prigozhin last year started marching on Moscow?
Right,
there was
a right.
slight idea that perhaps there was going to be an overthrow.
It was a revolt. They killed Russian soldiers, the Wagner mercenaries.
They killed Russian soldiers. They were marching towards Moscow. That just stopped. They took over a whole city that had big armed forces, Russian armed forces in it. But once that happened, not only did he go around again repressing opponents, but he also had an overhaul of some of the military. So no one inside the military would ever consider overthrowing him. He has created an amazing dictatorship where everyone is reliant on him.
And the head of that mercenary group, the Wagner group, Prigozhin, died in a plane crash, right?
Yeah, and I think Putin likes to make it very clear. You know, his opponents do not die quietly. Prigozhin died in a huge explosion on his plane. Then you had Navalny, of course. We're not sure how he died. His wife said it was Novichok. But you had Litvinenko and Skripal, two other opponents. They were poisoned as well. So, you know, Putin doesn't just get rid of his opponents quietly. He wants everyone to see what happens if you speak out against him, and, you know, often cruel and painful deaths.
Saturday will mark 2 years since Russia's leader invaded Ukraine, which is running low on weapons and ammo. New U.S. military aid remains in limbo in Congress. President Volodymyr Zelensky said at a security conference in Munich, Germany over the weekend,
"We are counting on this positive decision of the Congress. For us, this package is vital."
A bill the Senate approved contains $61 billion worth of military assistance for Ukraine, but some House Republicans oppose it. President Biden said Saturday after speaking with Zelensky by phone,
"The Ukrainian people fought so bravely and heroically. They put so much on the line. And the idea that now, when they're running out of ammunition, we walk away, I find it absurd."
Over the weekend, Russia took control of a city in eastern Ukraine, Nadvika.
It's a remarkable turnaround. You look back 1 year at the last Munich security conference, and everyone in the West felt that not only was Russia being pushed back, but that Ukraine could actually win. They could push Russia back to the 1991 borders when the Soviet Union fell apart. and there was optimism. You look at it today, and Russia is on the offensive. Not only did they capture the city of Avdiivka, they've also moved forward in Kherson and Zaporizhia, and they are preparing for a long war. And everyone knew this, that if they didn't win and take over Kyiv right at the beginning, then they could shift and prepare to last out the West. And I think Putin knew that the money would start to dry up, the weapons would start to dry up. He could mobilize hundreds of thousands of Russians and rebuild his army. That's exactly what he's doing. He's stocking up again. He's rebuilding. He's getting more weapons. And it may take 2 years. It may take 5 years. But there is no pressure on Putin right now to slow down. Even internal diplomacy and politics is difficult inside Ukraine at the moment.
President Zelensky has even made some changes, even at the top of his military, to deal with this. Did he have clashes with this general?
He did, yes, General Zelensky. And General Zelensky said a few months ago, I was in Kyiv at the time, just after, and I asked Zelensky about it. He said that the war was in a stalemate. And Zelensky was furious about that, because in Zelensky's eyes, victory is still there, that they can keep pushing the Russian forces back. And that's where the shift is really happening right now. Is that ever a possibility? Can the Russian forces ever be pushed out? And Zelensky is pushing back on those people who say that it can't happen.
You know, I know that you sat down when you went back to Ukraine. I know you've been, you know, badly injured and reporting on the war there. But when you went back and you sat down with President Zelensky, did you get the sense that things were starting to go backwards?
I think we already knew they were. We already knew that Western pressure was changing, and that, you know, this was also after October 7th and the attack in Israel, and you immediately saw money and arms and even media looking in a different direction. And Zelensky knew that. He knew that if the support didn't continue, that Ukraine was going to be in a bad place. He maintains this exterior of total optimism that they will absolutely win. But it's hard to see that when you look at what's happening on the ground. So it's difficult to know where Zelensky stands nowadays. And surely they are all looking ahead to November and the U.S. election, because, of course, President Biden said they will give unlimited support. But President Trump, on the other hand, would be very, very different. And as happens with all major events around the world, eyes are on the U.S. election. That could well determine the future of Ukraine. So fascinating time for them at the moment, and really an uncertain one.
All right. Lastly, you have your podcast that you launched a few months ago, Searching for Heroes with Benjamin Hall. How's it going, and who's next for you?
Dave, it's been an absolute pleasure, and thank you for asking. You know, I went through something that was really difficult, bad injuries. Our team was killed around me. But what I was so amazed about was the resilience of people I met after that, the people who came to save me. And I just think that we need to focus the light on those people. And so my podcast is interviewing people who have gone through something difficult, but come out the other side stronger. And it sends messages of resilience. So we are speaking to a boy. He's 21. He had hemophilia, then he had cancer, then he lost his leg. And throughout all of this, he has been the most incorrigible, optimistic, and happy person. And it's just amazing to see how he got through that. And hopefully he passes on some of those messages himself.
Well, congratulations on that. That's Searching for Heroes with Benjamin Hall, the podcast you can get right here where you get the rundown. Benjamin Hall, senior correspondent for Fox News. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Dave. It's a pleasure to be here.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
I'm Dana Perino. This week on Perino on Politics, the Republican presidential primary is heating up and candidates are zeroing in on the Palmetto State. National Review senior writer Noah Rothman joins me to examine campaign strategies ahead of the South Carolina primary. That's available now on Apple, Spotify, and FoxNewsPodcast.com.
This is Tommy Lahren with your Fox News commentary coming up.
Maybe it's a post-pandemic phenomenon, a generational sign of the times, or a combination of both. Young workers recording themselves getting fired and posting it on social media.
And to be let go for no reason is like a huge slap in the face from a company that I really wanted to believe in.
Can absolutely understand how you feel that way, why you feel that way.
That video, posted by TikToker Brittany Peach in January, has been viewed millions of times. She said coworkers at cybersecurity firm Cloudflare had been getting random 15-minute call invites all day, so she was expecting the worst. On her call, Peach asks for an explanation and defends her job performance, but gets nowhere. In a response to the viral video, Cloudflare CEO Matthew Prince called it painful to watch, writing that no employee should ever actually be surprised they weren't performing, and that just because they fire someone doesn't mean they're a bad employee. But layoff videos aren't the only thing that's been trending for Gen Z workers. So-called lazy girl jobs allow time during the workday for things like doing yoga, taking a walk, or going shopping.
Just like daily, day-to-day things that I needed to get done, that if I was working a job where I didn't have the flexibility to do that, that I wouldn't be able to do it.
To be clear, that doesn't mean the work isn't getting done. Gabrielle Judge, the TikTok creator credited with coining the phrase lazy girl jobs, says she had satire in mind while trying to make a point about workplace culture and that wanting more of a balance isn't the same thing as being lazy. These kinds of trends and priorities matter. A recent forecast from job review website Glassdoor says Gen Z, those born between the mid to late 1990s and the early 2010s, could become a larger portion of the U.S. workforce than baby boomers this year.
I think big picture, let's try to give them the benefit of the doubt.
Taylor Riggs is co-host of The Big Money Show on Fox Business.
I remember as a millennial, I came into the workforce and a lot of the Gen X boomers kind of negative on you, saying, oh, you don't have a work ethic, or you won't show up, or you want your work-life balance, or whatever it was. Gosh, 10 years ago, let's say, when we all first started joining the workforce. But I think that they learned that with the right guidance and mentoring and coaching, millennials or my generation will step up to the plate. We want to work hard. We want to show up. We want to do the right thing. So I'm hopeful that as horrible some of the things that we've heard about this younger generation, I hope that they aren't true. Because the same things were said about my generation, and frankly, we proved them wrong. Well, for the most part. So I'm hoping that for Gen Z or these young people coming in, we do know that the stereotypes are they want work-life balance. They don't want to come into the office. They don't know how to email. They don't know etiquette with their boss. But I'm really hopeful that if we give them time, mentoring, coaching, they too can turn it around. Because I feel like every young generation sort of has that negative stereotype, but eventually they sort of fall into place.
So definitely showing up in person, it can be easier to prove yourself. But also, you mentioned work-life balance. And that's another thing that gets me thinking back to lockdown and when everyone wasn't in the office for a while there, or most people weren't. Because isn't that one of those things, work-life balance, that we started hearing more about for everybody? Everybody was more concerned about it when the pandemic started waning and everybody went back, or a lot of people went back into the office, right?
Yeah.
Priorities change.
Yes, and that is true. And you can't change sort of the way that the country is moving in that aspect, which is a focus on mental health, on work-life balance, and all those things. And I don't want to discount that. I think those issues are important. I heard a great quote that when you die, your employer will replace you tomorrow, but your kids will never replace you. So all of that big picture makes sense. But if coming into the office 3 or 4 days a week instead of staying at home 5 days a week can help give you that extra edge, can help with the water cooler talk when I run into you in the hallways and we get to chit chat for 5 minutes on this cool new project that we're working on. I think those little steps can make the difference in this broader narrative of, yes, we are more focused on commute times and work-life balance, but I don't think that that means that you can never come into the office ever again and have those really fun special moments with your colleagues a few days a week. I've heard companies doing really fun things that instead of saying your podcast team comes in on a Tuesday and live radio comes in on a Wednesday and TV comes in on Thursday. Well, that doesn't make sense because then we're still not interacting with each other. Let's have everyone come into the office Tuesdays and Wednesdays so we can all see each other, all collaborate, and you're sort of forced to all do that together. So I think coming into the office for the sake of coming into the office is a little silly. If you're coming in for a purpose, a meeting, something collaborative, then I really see the point of it. And I feel like that's something that the younger generation can really get behind.
As workplaces change and evolve over time,
it's interesting how certain types of etiquette may change, but other things stay the same. Like maybe you used to have to know how to write a letter properly, and maybe now it's knowing how to write an email properly. But there are also new boundaries that end up sort of getting crossed that maybe shouldn't be crossed. And one example would be how some younger workers have started to record and post on TikTok, for example, their firings and layoffs. Maybe not the best signal to send when you go to apply for the next job, right? Are people still not getting that, like, things on the internet last?
I know. And I feel like there is a lot in this younger generation that wants to just be the influencer who goes viral on TikTok by posting an outrageous thing, such as what you just described. I'm hopeful that the majority of them understand that. First of all, I'm old school. If you are going to be getting laid off, I would hope that the company would still bring you in person and not do it over Zoom. But I'm not an employer. I'm an employee. So I don't have control over that. If it does happen over Zoom, I think you're right that sort of history has showed us, and older generations would tell you, it's grace, it's gratitude, it's leaving with your head held high, because then that will carry you through if you need a recommendation for the next employer. But, you know, I don't know. This is a brave new world. We've heard Gen Z say that they're afraid to pick up the phone, so they'll kind of do a text message, that they don't really know how to email, and they definitely don't want to talk to you on the phone. So I think you're going to be seeing the shift where employers and bosses who are this older generation are going to have to figure out how they're going to communicate with the young ones coming in.
One of the things I find very jarring lately, in or out of the workplace, is how much more prevalent artificial intelligence already is than it may have seemed just a year ago. Like, it felt like all of a sudden there was ChatGPT, and that kind of blew the lid off of the whole thing. But now cell phone companies are advertising their new phones with AI built in. And it's like, wait a minute, is, you know, AI in certain conversations has such a negative connotation already, but now it's being marketed already as a positive thing. Where, like, how are people supposed to understand and get their heads wrapped around that juxtaposition and what's it for and what it does?
I am, on the whole, a big believer in AI for some of the specific use cases that I'm hearing from companies. Yes, we can talk about the inherent biases that AI presents. If you're Googling a search result and the filter comes up and the person who has made that algorithm and the algorithm that AI is using then has that inherent bias. Those are clearly the downsides to it. But when we're talking about AI, and NVIDIA is the leader in this, they're going to actually be reporting their quarterly results on Wednesday. The proof is in the pudding, and they are killing it. And every company that talks about AI and talks about the use cases of AI is crushing it. So we're looking at NVIDIA on Wednesday to be reporting for that year double in revenue what they did the year before, mostly on AI. So when you have a lot of skeptics come in and say, I'm not sure about it, it kind of blew up overnight, right? It's new. A year ago, we weren't even talking about it. What I'll say is, in the last year, we've asked these companies, show us the proof. Show me the money. How are you using it? Is it just a fad, like the dot-com bubble, or are you really using it to help productivity, to create new products? And the money is showing us it's impacting the companies in the best ways. It's increasing productivity. It's hitting the top line. It's increasing their profitability on the bottom line. So it's working. I don't know long-term, you know, what it means for society, for job losses. A lot of job losses have been in tech. But up until now, there were really high expectations. And frankly, all these tech companies are rising to the occasion and showing us that AI has been worth all the hype.
There's been a real tug of war in the markets lately, as there often is, over what the Fed may or may not do at its upcoming meetings, partly after the latest inflation reports came in hotter than expected. But then we saw retail sales dip more than expected in January, right? Where does that leave the Fed with, do we cut rates? Former Treasury Secretary Lawrence Summers even suggested there's a chance they could actually raise rates.
Isn't that wild? Wild. Yeah. So really hard for people sitting at home who are confused, because every day it feels like the narrative changes. I think overall what I hear is inflation is hot and it's still too hot for the Fed to cut immediately. March is off the table. May is likely off the table. Larry Summers is right in that the risks, I don't think the Fed will hike, but what I think he's hinting at is the risk of cutting too soon still outweighs the risk of keeping rates really high and potentially pushing us into a recession. Because if you cut rates, inflation is just going to reignite and reaccelerate. And that really is an economy crusher. It hurts some of the lowest, poorest communities way more than a recession does. So I think that's sort of what he's getting at. Retail sales was a disaster. But the consumer, for the most part, is actually doing okay-ish. So until we start to see some of those long-term trends really roll over, I think the Fed is committed to bringing down inflation.
Yeah, I wondered. You answered Mike's question because I was just wondering if that retail sales report kind of is telling a bigger story than just a post-holiday slump, you know, for consumers.
You know, I think if you look underneath the hood, there's some concerns about delinquency rates are rising. Credit card balances are at an all-time high. We're going to be hearing from Walmart and Home Depot this week. That should give us a really good idea about how the consumer is doing. In Walmart's case, how the lower-end consumer is doing, who's been getting crushed by inflation. So they'll give us some insights. I think you are at that point where you've started to see it turn a little bit more than economists had expected. Some of the numbers are concerning when you're looking at, again, 30, 60, 90 days delinquent on credit cards. The numbers are going up, and they're going up for younger and poorer Americans. But again, you're not at that point where the Fed is going to be worried enough about it to start cutting because inflation still has to be that number one priority.
Taylor Riggs, co-host of The Big Money Show on Fox Business, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
The Will Cain Show is now dropping 5 episodes a week. Join Fox and Friends weekend host Will Cain as he tackles the latest headlines from his unique perspective, along with thought-provoking interviews with leading figures and live calls from viewers and listeners. Listen wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Subscribe to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Tommy Lahren.
What's on your mind?
Ever since the economic clowns in California raised the minimum wage for fast food workers to $20 an hour, many restaurants have raised prices considerably to accommodate the new demands. But if Senate candidate and Representative Barbara Lee gets her way, your food and goods will cost even more. During a recent debate with other California Senate candidates, Representative Barbara Lee was pressed on her desire to raise the minimum wage to $50 an hour. She defended this outrageous position by saying it's unaffordable to live in California. Yeah, no duh. But she clearly does not understand the way money or inflation works. Passing out more money doesn't make anything more affordable, Barbara. It's actually the exact thing that creates inflation in the first place. Folks, do not let California math fester nationwide. I'm Tommy Lahren, and you can watch my show, Tommy Lahren is Fearless, at OutKick.com.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.